We present the News Quiz with your host, Susan Kalman.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC News website read by Kathy Clugston.
Due to bad weather, the Isle of Man ferry service has been cancelled. A replacement bus service is available.
Our thanks to everyone who sent us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Holly Walsh. And opposite them on my left, Ramesh Ranganathan and Mark Steele. Jeremy, who went head-to-head to head the nation?
Seven people policed very authoritatively by Julie Etchingham, who dressed as a dental hygienist to terrify them, so they'd all just be very, very nervous. And it was an extraordinary cavalcade. Miliband had very bad advice. He stared at the camera the whole time. He's obviously surrounded by Blairites who want him to lose and deliberately give him bad advice. Like a leprechaun appearing on your shoulder just before your driving test and saying, remember, keep your eyes closed and your fingers crossed. So he did the whole Oswald Mosley thing of staring at the camera. And then somebody said, oh, those American expressions go well, you know. And so we did Reagan saying, there you go again. The other week he said, hell yeah. I kept expecting him to suddenly say, ask not what your country can do for you. And he's obviously, he's got very bad minders who hate him, who want to mess him up. Clegg was in an extraordinary mood. I think that would have been very tense between him and Cameron afterwards. Would your lordship like anything else before I retire? No, Clegg, but I was rather disappointed by your rather extraordinary performance this evening. Oh, just a little skit to entertain the rest of the servants, your lordship. Extraordinary performance.
I think it's pointless, Clegg, being there. After you've already done a load of debates and promised a load of things at a previous election and then done completely the opposite, it's pointless him saying he should have just brought in games, shouldn't he, Clegg?
I felt hippos. I felt like he was just doing an audition for the best man speech ever. I just, at the end of it, when they were sort of summing up, I felt like he'd spent the whole time kind of auditioning to be a best man. And in the end, when they were like, if anything you want to say at the end, I thought he just should propose a toast to the married couple.
the conclusion of the nation is that women are better than men and we should all live in Scotland. English voters are saying, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't mind living up there. And then you have the SNP. Yeah, all right, fine. If you want to be blamed for everything for the rest of your life, then live under the SNP.
Well, the thing is, the Times poll said that Nicola Sturgeon won the debate. And I mean, who'd have thought that all you needed to do was not shout over people and calmly stick to your guns? A lot of people are worried about Nicola Sturgeon having more power in Westminster. But I can't see a short Scottish woman taking over a beloved English institution.
Cameron did nothing at all. He set this whole thing up because he knew it would be a huge mess and that he'd have the Greens, the SNP implied, all to the left of Miliband, spending the whole time attacking Miliband. And Miliband would just be trying to fight fires to his left. And Miliband's trying to sort of attack Cameron, but just being attacked. And so what Cameron basically did, he's like a bloke who starts a pub fight by going, she called you a slag, and then hides in the toilet. He just disappeared for the whole thing.
It's quite interesting because even when Clegg attacked Cameron, Cameron then twisted it back onto Miliband. You know, and Miliband was on the offensive. One of the things that Miliband said was he said that he was talking about the NHS and he was saying that you know, it was the waiting times at the NHS were 18 months and under us we reduced them to 18 weeks. And I thought that's a convenient little figure. And I wondered, you know, it's quite a nice sound, but I wondered if they had the opportunity to reduce it to 17 weeks, but they thought that's not going to sound as good in the debate. So. Let's just keep it at 18.
But Cameron's answer, you know, why he's done a good job with the NHS, he says, we've got rid of 20,000 NHS bureaucrats. I thought, where are they, these people? It's a bit, well, it's like when Thatcher shut down all the psychiatric wards and called it, you know, care in the community. There are all these former NHS bureaucrats getting involved in other stuff and contracting out the cleaning. And so what did you bring to the NHS? Well, basically MRSA.
Holly, what did you think about Natalie Bennett from the Green Party and her performance in the debate?
this is really bad to say, but I sort of... The less confidence she had, the more I liked her. I was really rooting for her by the end. I was like, come on. I genuinely felt like... I felt like she was having a similar experience to me on a lot of panel shows where she was, like, just trying to get a word in edgeways half the time. Like, and that's the end. That's it.
It was remarked upon that there were more women in the leaders' debate than there have been on Mock the Week in some cases. Yeah. The thing about Natalie Bennett, though, is she does have some quite interesting ideas. She's got some quite brilliant ideas in a lot of ways, but there's no idea how to implement them. She's kind of like the flatmate you have at uni who educates you about blood diamonds but never does the washing up. It's that kind of...
Also, it is that thing of there were too many people. I think seven is too many. It felt a bit like one of those sort of charity singles that they do for Comic Relief where everyone gets one line from a song. Like at the end, that you would add it all up and they'd have sung Perfect Day. That was
Cameron's idea, though, wasn't it, Sorin? That was Cameron's idea, because he didn't want to have the debate. So first of all, he said, I'm not going to do it unless the Greens are involved. Ha-ha, now they won't do that. So then the broadcaster said, well, we'll get the Greens in. And then he said, but now the Northern Ireland parties have to be involved. And he kept trying to put it off. And he thought, even if they agreed to that, he'll say, well, I think there should be someone from ISIS should be there. It seems seems rather unfair. And what about my neighbour, who's 83 and doesn't get out much? And I think there should be 840 of us. And you're quite right, there'll be too many of us to say a line each. So we should all just have a grunt each.
But Ramesh, one of the things that people commented on was Ed Miliband looked directly into the camera. Now, I find it slightly creepy. I was watching it in a hotel room and I was in my pants. And I felt like he could see into my very... I ended up putting trousers on because I thought he could actually see me in my pants.
Yeah.
I thought it was a... Do you enjoy the straight into the camera kind of stuff?
I found it quite arousing. And I had the opposite effect. I was initially fully clothed, and by the end of it, I was naked as a day I was born. I really loved it. I sort of think that it's part of the symptom of the fact that he wants to, you know, he's been accused of not being convincing when he's talking, and I feel a bit sorry for him because, you know, he feels like he's making sense, but unfortunately, he's saying it the way he says it, you know, and so he's trying to deal with those issues, and so obviously he's been told to stare down the barrel of the camera in some sort of attempt to scare us all into voting for him. I don't know, like, you know, if you say his name into the mirror five times, he'll appear and save the NHS. I don't know, like... It's a weird advice he's been given to do that. But the one thing I did like is that he was... Because Clegg wore a yellow tie, Cameron wore a blue tie, he went for silver. I thought, hello. Ed's a bit of a maverick, isn't he? I'm going to wear a silver tie and creep people out. That's the way I'm doing it.
He does take things way too literally. He gets given this advice, like that thing, that fist with the thumb slightly pointing up. He takes everything to that extreme, you know, like look down the camera the whole time. But what he does, and he gets obsessed. He's obsessed with 0 hours contract. Well, that's a good thing to have a policy about. But then he just talks about that one thing, and then ignores the fact that he's been accused of crashing the economy. And I wasn't a huge fan of Blair or Brown, but they didn't crash the economy. It was the global banking system. There wasn't a moment in Wall Street in 2007 when someone said, "Holy cow. Public spending as a percentage of GDP has risen in the UK. We've got to get out of here. This whole banking system's going to blow any minute." That isn't what happened.
I mean, without a doubt, the positive reaction seemed to be that Nicola Sturgeon did incredibly well, as did Leanne Wood. I mean, personally, I very much admired the way that she responded to Farage's HIV comment. It was kind of in that, I'm not angry, I'm disappointed way. When some of the leaders then responded on Twitter 2 hours afterwards when they'd realised they probably should have said something about it. But Leanne Wood did very well.
She was brilliant. She was so brilliantly Welsh, wasn't she? She looked like she was... She looked like she was just a mum from the Rhondda, and when Farage sat, she looked like she was about to say, "Oh, you say anything like that again, you'll get the back of my hand, you horrible little public school oike."
She was lucky, though, because she got to say a lot of words that sound awesome in a Welsh accent, like rhetoric.
Rhetoric.
It sounded so good.
I wonder if they pre-selected those words, just to give her accent the best framework.
Yeah. Well, some of the phrases kept coming up. I mean, Nick Clegg kept calling David Cameron by his full name. He keeps saying, "David Cameron, David Cameron." And you just think, look, he's your husband, Nick. Stop, you know.
it's what you say to a naughty child using their whole name. You know that in real life he calls him sir, but it's what you do when you're cross with somebody. Oh, Susan Calman.
The other thing Miliband kept saying is what the people at home want to know. And I thought, well, who are you talking to then? If you know,
he was definitely talking to the people at home. That's...
He had this Derren Brown thing where he just thought, I'm going to stare at you until I know what you want.
Yeah, there was. He didn't push his polls up very much, but 85,000 people found their watches stopped.
I mean, there was this whole narrative going on among the women, who are all to the left of Labour, saying, let's not make an issue out of austerity. So we actually need to talk about this as a country. Should we just stop paying the deficit debt? Because if we can just run a national debt... Because it was pointed out that the country's been in debt for forever. You know, you can just be in debt. So that's a conversation we need to have as a country. Should we just not pay it back?
I've never understood. It's one of those questions that I just didn't understand. When we're having the austerity measures and people saying we need to, it's because of the deficit, I was thinking, well, nobody's explained what the... Like, are they going to repossess Sussex? Like, I don't understand.
OK,
what
so here it is, Rom. So you've got a mortgage where you live, probably, aren't you?
Yeah.
Right, so you should stop feeding your children. Don't feed your children until you've paid it all back to the Woolwich. That's sensible economics. Yeah. I think we can all agree.
That's right.
Let's not go to the bad old days of having mortgages and feeding children.
Now, let's move on to Mr. Farage. I don't know about you. I think he just puts as many controversial things as he can in a tombola and then says, okay, tonight it's going to be immigrants with HIV. This is going to be a vote winner. I can tell it is. Absolutely. So he was quite obsessed with houses every 7 minutes. He was very... I don't know if anyone saw one being built every 7 minutes. I didn't.
You can't build a house in 7 minutes. You really can't. Because you've got to get the materials before you even start. Yeah.
You need at least 11 minutes. Yeah. If you want to.
You've got to get planning permission as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that takes about 15, so... anyone, any views on Mr. Farage?
I like him. I like him. There you go, I said it, I like the dude. I like the cut of his jib, and I like his jib. I just sort of, you know, he's sort of he kind of comes across as a charming... You know, he's got this kind of... I like the way he sort of wobbles his head as he talks. I find him very charming. I find him very charming.
For the listeners at home, Ramesh is not being forced to say these words. Just in case anyone... He came top in some of the polls after the debate.
I was sort of watching it thinking, this guy's convinced me. You know, I just like... And then I like, was on the phone to my mum. What have you really contributed? Do you know what I mean?
Comedian Ramesh Ranganathan says to his own mother.
No, he's like, he does just sort of is just like the bloke in the corner of the pub who just says things, and he thinks I'll just chuck a lump of these out. Yeah, HIV, that's what cool. You know, Romanians, fact this is right. 97%, they're 97% the same DNA as seaweed, Romanians.
And the other interesting thing that happened in the debate, apart from the Thelma and Louise style joy of women being fantastic, was the heckler. I mean, that wakened everyone up, I think. I'd kind of lost consciousness slightly. And then a woman just stood up and it was while Cameron was speaking. Now, she was ushered out, and I don't know if you watched it, there was a slightly sinister sound of a door slamming. as she was removed, but it did kind of, because the audience were very well controlled up to that point.
Yeah, but I have to say, I thought the audience, on the whole, I think if we're going to be really critical about atmosphere, it'd be the audience. They didn't clap once until someone laid into Farage for the HIV comment. That was the first time they clapped. I felt like, as an audience, they were incredibly... I don't know who was doing the warm-up. But they did not do a good job because that wasn't exciting. Also, I felt like the questions, oh my God, so boring. I wanted one novelty question. At least at the end, someone stand up and say, who do you think is going to take over from Clarkson at the Top Gear? Just like open it up a bit, show these people as humans.
But the first question was from the start of the show, I think, Johnny Tudor.
Yeah, the new William Hague.
Yeah, the new William Hague.
That kid is definitely going to go on to be a psychopathic MP, that's for sure. No doubt.
He was, he became quite an internet sensation, Johnny Tudor. Yeah, people were taking pictures of him on the train and stuff, and I think they opened up as these are everyday people, and this wee boy, I'm a politicist, actually, thanks very much indeed. What do you think of the questions, Mark?
Well, I agree with Holly. I think they should have been a bit more human, shouldn't they? Instead of someone... I mean, how old was he? That's terrible, being
he's
that
17.
Age. 17. Could all the leaders please say... I mean, that, what sort of 17-year-old?
Yeah, you want, yeah,
this, you want a 17-year-old to ask a 17-year-old question like, why are you all wankers?
17-year-old should have stood up, pulled his trousers down and said, is this normal?
Really.
Last night, the leaders of the seven main political parties took part in a live televised debate broadcast on ITV. The debate featured Natalie Bennett, Nick Clegg, Nigel Farage, Ed Miliband, Leanne Wood, Nicola Sturgeon, David Cameron, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. Each leader was given one uninterrupted minute to answer a question posed by a member of the audience without deviation, hesitation, or repetition. The debates have been said to herald a new era of politics characterised by decency, common sense, and asking women something other than who makes their clothes. That is 2 points to Jeremy, but you know what? In this new era of multi-party politics, 2 points to everybody, I think, for that question, absolutely.
Political correctness on that.
Polly, why is everyone getting down to business?
Oh, this is the story about how this week Labour and Conservative Party have become pen pals. Mm-hmm. And they've started writing to each other via national newspapers and various other press outlets. The first letter was written by sort of the Conservative Party, and it was signed by, I think it was 103 different businessmen and women, sort of captains of industry. And they were sort of basically slagging off Labour and saying how great the Tories were. I don't know how you get 103 signatures that quickly of those sort of people. I guess you catch them on their way out of a ritual slaughter from an Illuminati meeting. But they were quite pleased with some of them. I mean, a big proportion of the signatures were either by people who'd been given titles. What's the word? Is that the word?
Titles? Yeah, titles.
Yeah, by Cameron, or who were contributing to the Conservative government. But one of the ones they were most proud of was they got it signed by one of the, or the main founder of Yo Sushi. And this guy used to be a big Labour supporter, but now he seems to be a big Tory supporter. But if I know one thing about Yo Sushi, he'll probably come back round again.
Also, since sushi is one of the main methods for disposing of Russian dissidents, I think it's lost quite a lot of credibility as a healthy snack, hasn't it?
Then Labour wrote a letter back. I think they tried to get it. Well, they definitely sent it to the Guardian. I'm not sure if they published it, but they sort of released it. And they said, why would you want to be supporting a party that was all businessmen? Why, we should be having normal people. And they got a ton of, I think it was like nurses and shelf stackers and people who worked in KFC to sign theirs, people on zero contracts. So it just became this sort of letter back and forth, which I'm not really sure what we've achieved from all of this, other than sort of say, well, the people who we predicted to be Tory supporters are Tory supporters, and the people who aren't. But that's
it's such a weird thing to go for 103, because that definitely means that some people said no. Like, I just think they should just go for a round number and make it look like that's how many you wanted. Do you know what I mean? 103 means we went for 200.
No, they went for 1,000.
Yeah.
There'll be some masters of industry or captains of industry who didn't get asked, and they'll suddenly be really upset that they're not regarded as high-level businessmen.
They left out all the bankers. They left. There were no bankers, hedge fund managers, or private equity people. They left them all out. They made it look like people who make things out of balsa wood and stuff like that.
There were a lot of gambling companies on there. Mm-hmm.
Was there?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which I'd say is pretty similar.
Mark, if it was a surprise, that's the way the Tories sort of tried to portray this. It's like, well, look at this. This is extraordinary. 103 of the country's wealthiest businessmen have come out in support of a party that was set up by wealthy businessmen and always gives tax cuts to wealthy businessmen and is run by wealthy businessmen. This is marvellous. And they organised the whole thing. George Osborne said this is an unprecedented intervention, but he was part of organising the whole thing. So it must have been a conversation like you'd have in a care home, that, mustn't it? What What an unprecedented intervention. Yes, but you organised it, Mr. Osborne. Did I? Well, I must say it's a most unprecedented intervention. Most unexpected. No, Mr. Osborne, you are the one who helped organise it. Did I? Well, that's quite a shock, isn't it? But it's, I don't know, we might as well say 103 of Britain's finest crack dealers are supporting us.
But how did they persuade the Telegraph to publish the letter and to write about it on the front page?
I just think it's not impressive to have a letter and then respond to it with a letter. That's not stepping your game up. I think, like, you should have, like, I don't know, like an interpretive dance with 100 of the business leaders. Do you know what I mean? Or I just don't understand why doing a letter is... You're just doing a letter. How many people are on the Labour letter? Like, 104?
Well, they started with 20, but it started adding. And I think one of them was a Blue Peter presenter. There was an ex-Blue Peter presenter.
Oh, wow.
And then loads of people who worked for KFC. But...
The thing is, it's one of these things that always confuses me. I've never been asked to sign a letter supporting anything. And I've never been asked, you know, an opinion poll. I'm never one of these people that people... Like, I always see opinion polls and no one's ever asked me. Am I one of these people that no one wants to ask to do anything? Do they just look at me? It's like when you walk outside a nightclub, I don't know if this happens, and they fly at everyone else and then they go, not for you.
It's a bit difficult. You get asked to sign a lot of things. Like on Twitter, people are always asking you to sign things. And I once signed something, and about 2 minutes later, I thought, do you know what? I don't think I necessarily agree with that. And then I thought, yeah, but no one pays any attention to petitions anyway, do they? So I justified it on that basis. I've said something I don't think, but it doesn't matter because no one cares.
And that's how my mum got deported.
Do you think, though... Anyone who's thinking, who should I...
Jeremy Hardy seems to have supported this particular intervention. Your mother's going to have to go if even he's signed it.
It wasn't that significant. It was very much to do with biscuits or something.
Business has become the hot topic of the election this week as the Telegraph released a pro-Conservative letter signed by over 100 business leaders. One of the people who signed the letter was the founder of Moonpig, I say. Signed the letter, he got it printed up with a picture of David Cameron's face on Batman's body. Labour released a counter-letter signed by a mix of business leaders, actors, low-paid workers and nurses. It's good to see in what has been dubbed the first truly social media election that the two main parties are still relying on the good old postman. 2 points to Holly. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Holly have 4 points, but Ramesh and Mark have 6 points. We start round two with a cutting from the Birmingham Mail.
Three men have been charged with a fray after a brawl at a charity boxing match in Wolverhampton. Police were called to investigate reports of punches being thrown at the event.
Our thanks to Ed Horner for sending us that. Ramesh, whose good luck has run out at the ballot box?
It's good luck, Jonathan. The Nigeria elections, in a horrible blow for everyone who likes amusing names. He was defeated in the election by Muhammadu Buhari. And why this is a big deal is because I think it's the first time in however long that the party in power has just peacefully ceded their power. And in fact, good luck, Jonathan. I mean, they're making a big deal about it, and I understand it's great that it's all been done peacefully and Nigerian people are celebrating and saying this is a wonderful time for Nigerian politics and stuff. But isn't a massive surprise that good luck, Jonathan, wished him good luck? I mean, the clue's in the name, isn't it? If you're in prison and you said, what did Killer Mike do? He killed someone. I mean, that's just part of the package, isn't it? So, but it is a great thing, and it's very exciting. I sort of wish we had a little bit more of sort of not ceding power over here. Like, if David Cameron loses the election, and, like, you know, if Ed Miliband wins and he turns up and then David goes, I'm not going, mate. What are you going to do about it? Call your mates down? I'm just going to stay. I've just handcuffed myself to the table. Let's see what you got, buddy. Yeah. I just want to see some more of that.
Do you sometimes wish, though, that there would be a little bit more of, not everyone politics, but people talk about Putin stripped to the waist and wrestling a bear and stuff like that. There was points of the debate last night where I just thought, oh, just do it! You know, you just wanted one of them to just, you know.
I would love it if they, like, one of them just made a really powerful point and then just dropped the mic like a rap battle. Do you know what I mean?
I would have liked it when the woman heckled, if one of them done a really hack heckle, put down, like, yeah, well, I don't interrupt you when you're at work flipping burgers.
In the Paxman thing, which we couldn't talk about because it was when we were recording this show, and audiences are disappointed to know this show is all recorded. All these shows were recorded in the 1990s and they just spread them out. But Paxman said, I was on the tube the other day, said this to Miliband, and a bloke said to me, if Miliband and Putin walked into a room together, after a few minutes, Putin would walk out and Miliband would be all over the floor. And I thought, well, you can't really condemn a man for not being as good at fighting as a trained KGB killer.
Miliband would just do the death stare, just creep him out.
It's the sex.
Oh, yeah. God, you keep looking into camera now. All right, you have back Ukraine. I can't stop.
The thing is about... The point is about kind of this story was that they were expecting something to kick off, and it didn't, which is a positive thing, I think.
But that's amazing. But also, the thing about Buhari is that he is a born-again Democrat, because in the early 80s, he got in on a military coup. He took over.
People like that, though, don't they? People like redemption. I was doing a benefit, some weird left-wing benefit somewhere in South London years ago, and there were some poets on before me, rap poets, and one of them was a big skinhead, about my age, shaved head and everything, big-looking, and somebody whispered to me, oh, do you know, he used to be a Nazi, and everyone was saying, oh, yeah, do you know, he used to be a Nazi, wow, he used to, and everyone was really excited, and I thought, well, hang on a minute, I've never been a Nazi. isn't that actually quite a lot better than having been a Nazi? And he, you know, this man Buhari, he says, oh, he's, you know, because he used to be a military dictator. And you think, well, isn't it better not to have done that? And he said, I'm a converted Democrat. And you think, no, you're a converted dictator. If you live in what used to be a barn, it's a converted barn. It's not the thing it's now become.
Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has conceded defeat to opposition rival and new president Buhari, marking the first time in Nigerian history that the ruling party has been deposed democratically. The grueling election campaign officially started on the 8th of January and ended on 31st of March, with parties spending just 2 weeks actually campaigning and 2.5 months working out whether they should invite the Greens, UKIP and Plaid Cymru to their debates. The election of Buhari over Goodluck Jonathan was met with a mixed response from the West, who were pleased with the deepening of democracy in Nigeria, but disappointed that the new guy had a less amusing name. Buhari promised he would give the nation all of his strength, commitment, sweat and toil. The nation responded saying they would take the strength, commitment and toil, but they were fine for sweat. Thanks very much. 2 points to Ramesh. Mark, if 30% of teachers equals X, then why?
Right, 38%, I suppose, that's the number of teachers. I don't know if it was exactly that, but that must be the number of teachers who leave, it turns out, in the first year of their teaching. They go through all the rigmarole you have to go through to become a teacher, and then they think, oh, no, I didn't know there had to be kids involved. And, oh, no, and they don't want to learn, and we're not allowed to teach them anything particularly interesting. We just have to teach them stuff to get them through the exams and dates. That's the first thing, like history, for example. Dates, which is the least important part of any story, usually, dates, isn't it? Like, if you tell someone, God, tell you what, I was on holiday once and I tipped out of a boat and ended up having to swim away from a shark. We wouldn't go, yes, but was it August the 9th or October the 11th? Well, it's the least interesting thing, but that's dates. And the first thing you learn about history when you go to school, even when I was six, the first thing, history, Battle of Hastings. When was the Battle of Hastings? When? And later I come to think, do you know what, I bet even in 1071 people couldn't remember, probably. I bet they go, oh, it can't be 5 years ago already. No, well, it was 1067 when Ken got leprosy, it was. So they get fed up with, I don't know what they get fed up with. They get fed up with everything, and kids chucking blackboard rubbers at them and setting fire to things, whatever they do.
Were you not a teacher, Ramesh? Is that
I was a maths teacher, yeah.
Why do you think so many teachers quit within a year of qualifying?
Well, you know, the advertising campaign's ridiculous, isn't it? You know, like, you watch the advert and there's this guy just walking through going, it's all about inspiring and da-da-da. It's not, mate, it's about putting out fires, you know, and... The problem is what my experience was, is that I trained to be a teacher and you're all enthusiastic about it. And then you see the people that have been doing it for years, and they look like they're just waiting for death. And it sort of makes you worried that this is what it's going to be for you. Do you know what I mean? And even in, like, the short time... You know, I was teaching for, what, 6, 7 years or something. I was a maths teacher. I wasn't a very good one, but it, as it turns out, it doesn't matter. I managed to sort of stay under the radar. But the problem is that they'd moved the goalposts so much, your workload, it just went insane. You know, I became, like, a union rep because I just agreed with strike action just to have a day off, you know, like, just have a break, you know, not because I wanted anything changed particularly. And I agree with teacher accountability, you know, I do agree with it. Not for me personally, I think I should just be let loose to do what I want. But generally speaking, I agree with teacher accountability. But they did it to such a degree, you'd have, like, spot checks all the time, you know, people just drop in, swoop in your classroom and see what marking you've done in the last week and stuff like that. And I did, you know, Jedi marking, which is just, that feels like a B, you know, that apparently is not up to the standards of modern education, apparently. So either you make the job easier or you just make the adverts more realistic where the guy's just crying.
That's the same for all advertising. I don't know if you've seen those adverts of those women who eat yogurt. I've never seen anyone that happy after eating a yogurt.
Ski crystal meth range. When I was a kid, teachers, the one thing that united all teachers, they were all mad. Every single one of them was barking. There were people with bits of shrapnel sticking out their head from the wall. If they'd done random drug tests, half of them would have been sacked. I mean, it was that people had big personalities, teachers, and you just sat there just in wonder that this person was able to function in the world.
I just remember teachers used to be quite magical because in the old days when the staff room door opened, the smoke... it was like stars in their eyes. They would...
It's funny you say that, because I always feel that whenever I walk past a strip joint, it's really mysterious and magical. And it's exactly the same feeling as when I was a kid and I used to walk past the school staff room. And you were like, what's going on in there? Yeah.
Well, you know what's going on in there.
I mean, both are full of adults whose lives didn't work out as planned.
Thanks, Holly.
The stripping's going really well for you.
I was a huge SWAT at school, and I lived for parents' evening. That was... Because that's like the SWAT sports day. But I always wonder why we don't have parents' evenings as adults. Because I just think you'd work a lot harder in your job if you knew that once a year you had to sit down with your boss and your mum and dad. About how much you messed around at work.
Do you know what, though? I blagged it every parents' evening. Like, half the kids, I couldn't remember what they'd been up to. So I'd always encourage the kid to come with the parent. And then when they sat down, I'd go, well, what do you think I'm going to say? And then take a lead from them. Because they'd normally be pretty on it. I think you're going to be really... You're very disappointed in the lack of effort. I am. You're absolutely right.
I feel I know what it's like to be a substitute teacher there. Filling in for an absent authority figure. Trying to get an unruly group to order and just not getting the respect that you deserve. That.
Sandy lets us bring games in at the end of the series. Yeah.
Almost 40% of new teachers quit within a year of qualifying, according to a speech given at the Association of Teachers and Lecturers annual conference. In her speech, Union General Secretary Dr. Mary Boustead questioned why some people completed their teacher training and then did not start teaching immediately. It's your own time you're wasting, she said. Reaction to the speech at the conference was muted because most of the attendees were catching up on their marking at the time. The cost to the taxpayer for training these teachers is estimated to be just under £1 billion. On the upside, with no teachers left, it won't be long before no one knows how much that is. 2 points to Mark. Holly, have a listen to this. She was so determined to take him right out of my hands. If you're rattling love, they can see you on the very first dance. She was young and pretty, and young and pretty. We give them all our kisses, now they found another missus, because we lost them to a DIY. Holly, why can't you do it if you B&Q it?
Well, I think this is the news that 1 in 6 B&Qs is due to be shut down. We're sort of past our heyday of DIY as a nation. Apparently, they're shutting them down because we're just not as into doing up our houses as we used to. I mean, I personally, I absolutely love DIY. I think it's genuinely, one of my favourite things. I love,
really?
I paint other people's houses, I paint my house. I love doing DIY.
Really?
Yeah, I'm really impressed by anybody, you know. Like the other day, my husband changed a car wheel. It was like a physical renewal of our wedding vows. I was so into it. It was
really?
Amazing, yeah.
Are you a fan of DIY, Ramesh? Will you miss B&Q?
No, I want them all shut down. And not, I'm not saying that, obviously it's sad about the jobs and stuff, but DIY, I hate it. I think it should be made illegal. You know, I hate going to anyone's house that has done DIY in the last year because you know that the first 25 minutes is going to be hearing about what they've done. And then we did this, couldn't care less, mate. Like, can we leave? I would like to... It's like the trailers for a film. When people have done DIY in their house, right? I'm quite keen to miss that part of the evening.
Do you do that, though, Holly? Like, if Ramesh came round, would you point at a painted wall and
yeah,
go...
Yeah, of course.
...admire it?
Yeah, I'd do all of that. I'd say I knock this wall down with my bare hands, with my tiny fists, I punch through.
Yeah.
I'm on my teammate's side here. Terrible. Shut the lot down.
Yeah.
Terrible. And now, everything's DIY, even if you don't want it to be, just because you go down and buy, say, or I'll buy a table... And then they give you a box with a tree in it, and you have to... or a map with where the tree is, and you have to go... And then people who do DIY, and then when they come around your own house, and then, they go out to the toilet or something, and the door goes, I tell you what, a little bit of planing on that, a little bit of sanding, one day, or we could just not do that, and it just mildly squeaks.
You know what stop the door doing that? You not being here. So what are you...
Exactly.
One in every six B&Q stores in the UK is to be closed down, with 3,000 jobs put at risk. 60 stores across the country will be closed and dismantled, but on the plus side, at least they already have the right tools for the job there. The closures will take place over the next 2 years, which is still quicker than the average UK DIY job. 3,000 jobs are at risk, with 900 workers being told it's curtains for them and the rest being redeployed in other home refurbishment departments. 2 points to Holly. Ramesh, which cure from back in the day keeps MRSA away?
Basically, they found a cure from the Dark Ages to cure MRSA. I don't know how they came up with it. I don't know where in the conversation about where we're going to solve this problem it comes from. It contains, amongst other things, wine, garlic and bile from a cow's stomach. And apparently the University of Nottingham, they're having some sort of discussion and they were saying, it's a bit annoying cleaning up these hospitals, isn't it? How are we going to stop MRSA? And he said, why don't we just have a look in a book from the Dark Ages? And they found the solution.
Because that's your first thought, isn't
yeah,
it?
That's, yeah, well, that would be my second, to be honest. But I can read out to you the exact receipt. work an eye salve for a wen. Take crop leek and garlic of both equal quantities. This is for if you want to do this at home. Pound them well together. Take wine and bullock's gall of both equal quantities. Mix with the leek. Put this then into a brazen vessel. Let it stand 9 days in the brass vessel. Wring out through a cloth and clear it well. Put it into a horn. And about night time, apply with a feather to the eye. The best leechdom.
Blimey.
Yeah.
Is a brazen vessel a vessel that's no better than it ought to be?
It does make you wonder how they got to. Like, do you try out a load of ingredients and then they're just scratching their heads and just thinking, what can we do? You know what we haven't tried? Bile from a cow's stomach.
Yeah, yeah.
I love all this. I used to study medieval art, so there's a lot of pictures. And,
did you?
Yeah. One thing I think is, I think it's a shame that we no longer use patron saints as much as we should in modern pharmacy. You know, because back in the day, if you couldn't get your hand on a sort of any bullock's bile or whatever, you would choose the patron saint of whoever it was who affected your particular ailment, and you would pray to them. My favourite one is this Irish monk called St. Fiacra. I think, I don't know how you
Fiacra.
Say it.
Fiacra.
That is a, it's, it could be difficult to say because it's one of those Irish names, so that could be Neil. You know, that's... But he was a 7th century monk, and he was the patron saint of hemorrhoids, which I always think is one of the... Like, when you find out as a saint what you're going to be the patron of, and they're like, hemorrhoids, and he's like, this is not good. And they're like, at least people will have to kneel to pray to you.
1,000-year-old Anglo-Saxon eye remedy has been found to be an effective treatment against the MRSA superbug. The potion is made up of garlic, onion, wine and ox bile and has been called a breakthrough for alternative medicine as well as a handy way of using up your leftover household ox bile. The remedy was discovered in a 1,200-year-old Anglo-Saxon text in the British Library and is said to be the most exciting find of a book since Fly Fishing by J.R. Hartley. The success of the remedy has led for calls for other medicines to be abandoned in favour of throwing patients in a river to see if they float or drown. 2 points to Ramesh. Before we reveal the final scores, has anyone got a cutting they'd like to share?
This was sent in by Andrew Rowe, and it's from the Northwich Guardian advertising a new swimming pool and fitness centre. 95 station gym, function training area, over 60 fitness classes, 2 swimming pools, including water.
I've got one. It's on a label for some sort of garment for a child. It says here, 100% polyester, wash inside out, remove child before washing.
Stephen Yolland of Melbourne. This was an Australian a website of an Australian radio station. The woman who injected her 8-year-old with Botox for beauty pageants has lost custody of the child. The child didn't look surprised.
From Beryl Wyatt from Welwyn Garden City. It's from The Times. It's from the film section. It says, film show, watch our critics discuss Cinderella and get hard.
The scores are, Jeremy and Holly have 8 points, but the winners this week are Ramesh and Mark with 10 points. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Waitrose website sent in by Dick Jones.
Add a touch of quintessential English charm to your kitchen with this colourful French bowl.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Jeremy Hardy, Holly Walsh, Ramesh Ranganathan and Mark Steele. In the chair was Susan Kalman and the news was read by me, Cathy Clugston. The chair's script was written by Jack Bernhardt, Max Davis and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, Craig Ainsley and Ben Harris. The producer was Matt Strong.